Welcome to Mindset for Medical Moms. I'm your host, Courtney Given, fellow medical mom and life coach. I'm here to help you handle everything from doctor's appointments to surgery so you can feel confidence and peace as you navigate the ups and downs of medical motherhood. This podcast will share strategies and real life tools to strengthen your mindset and increase your emotional resilience. I'm so glad you're here. Let's go. Hello, beautiful medical moms. Welcome back to the podcast. Last week, I made a change to the podcast. I am debuting new episodes on Tuesdays. I know, it's a huge change. I am sharing that because I had so much drama in my mind about making this change. As my schedule has changed and as have the seasons of life changed, Mondays just weren't working out for me anymore. And I found myself in this place where I was procrastinating and getting in my head about being medical mom on Monday. I love alliteration. And so for me, I thought, oh my gosh, this is so perfect. Mindset for Medical Moms can come out on Mondays. It's so catchy. It's easy to remember. And yeah, I just was so caught up in this idea that it had to be on Mondays, but it just wasn't working anymore. And instead of just recognizing that I could change my mind, I kept trying to force myself to want to do this on a Monday, and it just wasn't working. And so then I realized, oh my gosh, I don't even have a problem. The problem is I'm in charge and I'm not recognizing that I'm in charge. Sometimes the problem is we just don't even recognize that we have the power to change our minds and make a new decision for whatever is currently going on in our lives. And anyway, so yeah, Mindset for Medical Moms is now going to be on Tuesdays. And I am grateful that I made that realization and made that change last week. Okay, so today we are going to dissect self-compassion. If you look up any guide towards healing pain, overcoming obstacles, working through depression or anxiety, all the advice has one thing in common. You must employ self-compassion. They might say it in a different way, but it really boils down to self-compassion. And this makes a lot of sense because self-compassion in and of itself is a set of skills that helps regulate your emotions and manage your brain. So self-regulation and managing your brain are two very key components to self-compassion. So it makes a lot of sense that this is a key into feeling better, which is my job as a life coach, is to help you feel better, help you stop feeling overwhelmed, and help you feel more confident. And when you apply self-compassion to your life, you are able to achieve those things because you are actively stopping cycles of perfectionism. You start being able to recognize when your brain wants to go into black and white thinking, all or nothing thinking. You stop feeding insecurity and self-doubt, which is also contributes to anxiety and depression. And when you're able to do those things, when you're able to see how you are contributing to those circumstances, it truly lays the foundation for loving yourself, because self-compassion is like the precursor to do that. Sometimes we kind of are like, oh, this is how I love myself, but it's always conditional. And I think one of the reasons why it's so hard is because to like be self-compassionate on a regular basis is that you have to actually step back and allow yourself to say, hey, it's okay that I'm fallible. Did I say that right? Fallible. That I'm imperfect. That I am going to make mistakes as a wife, as a mother, as a human, as a friend, as a family member, as a person in society. I'm going to make mistakes. And I'm allowed to love myself no matter what. I don't need to expect perfection from myself all the time in order to be a good person or a good mother. I don't need to question my self-worth every time I'm struggling or anxious or even happy. This is why I speak so often about self-compassion, because it's truly the key to creating a better relationship with yourself, which is the foundation to creating better relationships with all the other people in your life. So what is self-compassion? Self-compassion is the ability to treat yourself with kindness, understanding, and acceptance. And although it sounds really simple, the problem is that these are often seen as permissive behavior. And this comes up a lot with the clients I work with, because when I start teaching self-compassion and break it down to like, what if it's okay to accept this about yourself? Or is it understandable that this is how you feel or this is how you reacted? It's often met with disagreement, right? But my clients want to challenge this, which is great because this is how we unfold what their brain is doing around these kinds of things. But what happens is we confuse kindness with permissiveness or laziness. We confuse understanding with lack of drive or willpower or excuses, like we're making excuses for ourselves. We confuse acceptance with approval. We think that by accepting ourselves, we're approving of all of our mistakes or poor choices, or even just a simple habit we don't want to keep doing. We just think that if we accept it, we're somehow going to keep continuing on with that behavior and nothing will change. We think that if we are kind or understand or accept ourselves, that we are somehow going to become out of control without any sense of morality. That the opposite, being hard on ourselves or being mean to ourselves, which we often confuse with discipline. We think we're just being like stern or disciplined, but in reality, we have to call it what it is, which is self-bullying. We become our own bullies in our minds. But we think this is what kindness is, right? We think being harsh with ourselves and honest is kind. We think telling ourselves the truth of just how we are is understanding. And if this were true, then everything you have wanted to do or become would have already happened by now, because we take the opposite approach so much. So where are the results? And certainly there are examples of this working. There are people who can force themselves through self-loathing or self-hatred in order to do things. But one, if there is another way, why wouldn't we take that? Two, it often leads to burnout, depression, or other issues that are just as heavy to deal with. In fact, it makes it worse. It is why we become so critical of ourselves. When we employ that self-criticism, we are also often becoming people pleasers. We are not allowing our needs to inconvenience other people. We become perfectionists. Perfectionism is just about fear. Okay. So many times people describe themselves as a perfectionist, as if it's this personality trait that there's really nothing you can do about. But perfectionism is a societal conditioning. Like, you've been socialized to be a perfectionist. This has nothing to do with your personality. Maybe you're a little more type A, but this is not something that you were just born with and you cannot change. None of these qualities are. Being a people pleaser is not something that you were just born with and can never change. These are social conditions that have been created through what you have learned and believed about who you are and what you are allowed to be. And in turn, you ignore your own needs. You stop taking care of yourself and you sacrifice those parts of you, thinking that that's how you will get over your mistakes or failures or grow or progress or change your behavior in any way that's meaningful. And all it does is perpetuate that you don't deserve to be treated well and that loving yourself is conditional. And when you continue to believe those things, you continue to outsource where your worthiness comes from. You overseek validation from other people because you need to have other people reinforce your worth, because certainly the voice in your head is not an authority to do so. Some of the reasons why you might be more critical of yourself is, well, the first one of the reasons why you are critical of yourself is simply evolutionary. To survive in a group setting, you had to, in order to survive in a group setting, you had to comply with the social conditions of your village or your tribe. We still have a primal brain that fears being exiled from the group. And that fear kept your ancestors alive. The social context of history gives us a lot of understanding about why we can become consumed with making sure we're acceptable to others. But now in modern society, it's become a maladaptive behavior and it causes way more harm than benefit. We're no longer trying to survive the mountain lion that's chasing our tribe, or, you know, we're hunting the mountain lion, so we need to all coordinate as a group and trust each other. The lions now have become comparing ourselves with other people online, chasing that perfectionism, sacrificing ourselves in order to be liked or accepted by other people. Just the fear alone of not being accepted causes us to contort ourselves and make ourselves smaller and stop allowing ourselves to be authentic. The goal with self-compassion, ultimately, I believe, is to help create internal safety. Because if you cannot be safe with yourself, you can't expect yourself to feel safe with others. And so many of us want it to be the opposite. We want to seek the safety of other people's opinions and other people's reassurance, but it will never be enough. We will keep chasing that, keep needing it so strongly. It will never feel like enough, because part of ourself that we have conditioned ourselves is that self-doubt, is that part of our brain that's like questioning whether or not we can even believe what other people are saying is true. And if you have a hard time accepting compliments or believing positive things people say about yourself, there is a reason why you still want to hear those things, but still can't believe it yourself. It's this like catch 22 of like, I want people to affirm my worth, but I also don't know if I actually believe what they're saying is true. So I'm going to keep second guessing myself and overthinking and spending so much time and energy in my brain, feeling overwhelmed, feeling stuck, feeling confused, feeling worthless, feeling unloved. And we think that that has to come from other people to be meaningful. But if you keep chasing that outside validation, it will never be enough. You will never find a source that will just continuously uphold that part of you. It has to come internally. And that's the problem, is that we are not taught how to self-validate. We are not taught how to accept our own authority as just as valid, if not more valid, than another person's opinion of us. Even if we saw things as equal as another person, that is a step in the right direction. Ultimately, your own opinion of yourself trumps everything. But often, we don't even see ourselves as equal to other people. We see our own opinion of ourselves as not equivalent to someone else's. And that's why when we try to do something maybe more authentic to ourselves or outside of our comfort zone, we start to question like, oh, is this the right choice? Should I ask other people's opinions? We have to outsource all this authority because we're not used to believing in ourselves. And this starts with self-compassion. So what are the skills of self-compassion? And I use the word skill very specifically. Like I'm using the skill, the tool of self-compassion is composed of skills because all of the things I teach on this podcast and to my coaching clients are skills that we have to practice. The skill of anything in life is something that you learn how to do and then put into practice in order to be skilled at this. Like a wood carver, for example, I don't know why this is coming to my mind. They are taught how to carve wood and then you practice and become a good word wood carver, or crocheting or gardening or dancing or singing or drawing, any of these things, right? If we think of the skill of drawing or painting, I'm always blown away about these TikToks where people will say like, look at my progression as an artist, and they'll show something they drew in sixth grade and in 10th grade and then in at 20 years old and 25. And their progression is so powerful because they continue to believe that they were an artist even when in sixth grade their art was not as good as themselves at 30. And when you think of it as a skill like this, like, yeah, you might not be very good at being kind to yourself now, but if you start employing the practice of kindness and invest in that skill, by the time you are in 3 months from now, you are going to be significantly kinder to yourself. You are going to have put the practice in so that you can draw upon that tool regularly. If you are doing it, you're not going to have the same success, and you might even convince yourself that it's not worth doing because you don't see the results immediately. So you have to remember, this isn't something that you're supposed to be good at overnight. And again, if you think like, oh, I should just be self-compassionate to myself today, and then tomorrow everything will be fine and I'll finally feel healed and worthy and whole. These are lifelong practices. These are tools that will serve you for a lifetime, but they only are beneficial if you employ them. It's not going to work if you just think to yourself, I'm going to be self-compassionate, and actually don't follow through with the self-compassion. So what are the skills of self-compassion? One, it's literally being kind to yourself. This looks like being able to accept a compliment. This is an example of how I tried to be more kind to myself. When someone would compliment me, I would assume that they were just being polite. And that meant in my mind that when people are complimenting me, they're just being polite about it, which meant they don't actually mean it fully. They're just like saying it because they think that's what they're supposed to do. And this obviously was stemming from my own insecurity about believing kind things about myself. And so one way I stopped this kind of pattern of thinking is by considering the compliment and assuming people are sincere. Because when I compliment other people, I'm sincere. I don't go out of my way to compliment people when I'm not sincere. I think complimenting other people is a great way to spread kindness. And one of the values in my life is to be kind. Showing myself that I'm not being kind to myself by second guessing other people's intentions was causing me to reinforce that kindness to me isn't what I deserved or I should expect. And so I got very curious anytime I heard a compliment or received a message from someone thanking me about something I shared on Instagram or something like that. And I stopped second guessing it. I just decided that I'm going to assume this person is sincere and telling the truth from their perspective, right? Being kind to yourself also includes allowing yourself to recognize and celebrate your successes. Celebrate the progress you're making, no matter how small that progress may seem. It is noticing the hard work you're putting in into your life, you are allowed to recognize the good things about yourself. And I think women have such a hard time with this because we are so socialized to be humble, to be polite. If we are kind to ourselves and compliment ourselves and celebrate ourselves, we are being arrogant and foolish, and we're full of ourselves. Like, this is not something that women are taught to do. But on the other hand, when we look at confident people, they are good at being kind to themselves. Men who are able to accept compliments and talk highly of their accomplishments are seen as leaders. They are seen as trailblazers. They are seen as confident people. And yet, as women, we assume that if we are even remotely confident, we're going to fall into the depths of arrogance. So being kind to yourself is a key to self-compassion. So one way we are not self-compassionate is by assuming something is wrong with us when we experience negative emotion, and then we resist it. We stop it. We want to stop ourselves from being broken. We want to stop ourselves from not being happy. The key to this is reaffirming that nothing has gone wrong with you when you feel a negative emotion. Something is not wrong with you when you are sad, when you are frustrated, when you are feeling impatient. The judgment you have towards your negative emotions is going to stop you from practicing self-compassion. So the opposite needs to happen, which means you notice your emotions and you're able to accept that you are experiencing this emotion and that it's a normal human thing to have. In life, we're going to experience pain. And because you are experiencing pain in any sense of the word, emotional or physical, you might start to question your own worth or what you did to deserve it, or if you were cursed, if the universe hates you, if, you know, there's so many stories that start coming up when we start to experience pain. And the key to this is just recognizing that it's a common, normal human experience. Now, note, for clinical or severe depression, you can still respond to yourself with compassion. Getting help, going on medication, seeking a medical advice regarding your mental health is very self-compassionate. When you are experiencing depression, in the sense that your worthiness has changed, I understand what it's like to be severely depressed. What makes it worse is telling yourself that if you weren't depressed, you would be more worthy of good things in your life. Your depression makes you less worthy. And at the end of 2022, December 2022, I was having very severe depression symptoms. And I was also experiencing PTSD. I'd never experienced this before in my life, the PTSD part. And it was very scary. And I felt very unworthy. I felt so scared that if I shared that I was experiencing these things, people would think less of me. And this kind of thinking makes it harder to seek help. It makes it harder to want to hire a life coach, go to a therapist, because you think that you have to admit that you're broken. You have to admit that something is flawed within you inherently. Like, everyone else, they're fine, but you are the exception, and you have something inside of you that's just not right. But that is what stops us from self-compassion. And self-compassion is the key to healing on any level. When you are depressed, you still have to have skills to help yourself through the depression. Okay, medication is one of those tools. I have ADHD. I've known since 2019. And I just finally got on medication for it because I'm going to do a whole episode on ADHD. And because I realized this is a tool I wanted to try. I have a lot of other tools that I still have to employ. So I want you to understand it doesn't exclude you, right? Because you're going to say, okay, yeah, nothing is wrong with me when I am not depressed and sad because I'm allowed to be sad. But when I'm depressed, that means something's broken inside me. This is not true. Employing self-compassion, even when you are experiencing anxiety or depression or any other mental health condition, still will benefit from implementing these things into your life. It starts with believing that your worthiness is not conditional. It doesn't matter what kind of mental health condition you have. Your worthiness is not based on whether or not you are in a good mental health state. And believing that you have to be in a different mental health state to be worthy of love or to love yourself, is going to perpetuate your pain. So, recognizing that we all experience pain and all kinds of emotions, the whole scale of emotions, is not something that has gone wrong. You're experiencing the human experience. This is a very important part of self-compassion, because it stops you from believing that you should be the exception, that you should be perfect, that you should be the one that doesn't have these kinds of challenges, that you can overcome all of these things by being unkind to yourself and willpower. Okay? Number three, the third skill of self-compassion is being able to recognize thoughts, feelings, and facts. Managing your brain is the key to self-compassion. Who would have thought, right? Being able to separate your thoughts from your feelings from the facts is going to give you so much more empowerment, because you're going to be able to understand what's in your control and what is not. And when we are people pleasers, when we are perfectionists, when we fall into the black and white thinking, that is all an attempt to control things we cannot control. Understanding our brain helps us fall back. We're all going to attempt to do this, right? There's not going to be like a cure for wishing we could control other people. I still find myself wishing I could control the future and wishing I could control everything. Really, it would be nice to just be in control. But the thing is that when I start to feel that frustration or feel that lure of wishing I could just control things differently, go back to the facts. I go back to what I'm thinking, what I am feeling. Hey, am I giving myself to feel my current state? Am I believing thoughts that are not serving me? What are the facts here that I'm ignoring or trying to deal with? This gives yourself clarity, a pause. It stops you from spiraling. It's a necessary skill for the rest of your life. Unfortunately, we have to manage our brain and be in charge of ourselves, which part of me never wants to be in charge. But also, I've gotten the most success and most healing from taking that accountability and reminding myself that ultimately, an authority is worth investing in, truly. Number four, all of these skills work towards each other, right? You don't have to just go 1, 2, 3. It's not in order necessarily, but these are all like buildable skills. And the last one is that you can look at your behavior with curiosity instead of avoidance or judgment or any kind of resistance of fear that you're going to lose your worthiness by admitting to yourself that you have done X, Y, and Z. Being able to look at your actions with curiosity is the opposite of shame. And so many of us live in shame, like perpetual shame, caused by perfectionism, caused by all these social conditions that we just don't pay attention to, that we need to unlearn and relearn how to be compassionate towards ourselves. So it's two parts. One, you look at your behavior with curiosity, not judgment. And two, any change from that place of curiosity comes from a place of love for yourself and not self-loathing or self-judgment. Any long-term change I've made, any habit change I've made, has come from curiosity and self-compassion. Being able to say, hey, I want to work out. I want to love my body. How do I do that from a place of love? I know I've said this a million times on here, but being able to love my body through exercise has been life-changing for me, because it's been such a physical example of how I used to loathe working out, believed that working out was a punishment, and believed that I wouldn't be able to stick with it, so it wouldn't matter. And once I stopped judging myself, once I stopped believing that, because, and part of me, the ironic part of this whole thing is that I also simultaneously believed that I should have been working out this whole time. I should have been stronger. I should be able to do all these workouts with ease and excitement and know how to do all of this stuff, right? I was believing very contradictory things, first of all. But also, I was just stuck in that judgment and shame that I didn't have it all worked out perfectly. Never shamed myself into working out successfully long term. I could get myself to work out once and then 3 weeks later, maybe again, but excited, motivation, all of those things that I wanted to have were on the other side of letting go my judgment, accepting where I was at, able to change any habit you want, create any habit you want, achieve a goal that you have, is going to need to come from a place of love. We want to love ourselves through any changes. This is something, again, I think some of my clients are surprised by. And we really do work on loving yourself from the inside out so that you can make the changes you want to make without all this drama. Invest some time into this, right? It doesn't have to be a lot of time. Minutes a day can change your life. The analogy I use often. I took swim lessons last summer because I had never had swim lessons in my life. I kind of knew how to swim. It was like doggy paddling. I could jump into a pool and somewhat safely get to the other side. I felt comfortable swimming on my own, but there were times in the ocean where I would be nervous when I was responsible for my kids, because I'm like, if I have to save both of us, I think we're drowning. I just did not feel confident in my ability to swim to safety if something were to happen. I didn't like that. I was like, you know what? I want to feel more confident in the ocean. I live on an island. When I started swim lessons, the instructor said, I want to see you swim. So I got in there and I swam how I normally swam. And I'll never forget him telling me, you are using all of your energy so inefficiently that this is how you drown. And it confirmed to me what I already knew. Like, I knew just enough to like fake it, but not enough to actually carry me through safety. And I was successful, right? We could claim that I was successful at swimming. I've swam since fifth grade. That's how long. I remember getting made fun of in fifth grade, and I stopped swimming with a floaty. So I said, okay, who needs a floaty? I'm going to teach myself how to swim, which was doggy paddling. And because of this, it literally put myself in position so I could successfully swim at swim parties. When I was told this, I was like, oh, like part of me was like thinking that I would just learn how to swim better. I didn't realize I had to relearn how to swim from the beginning. Like, I thought maybe the doggy paddling would transition into something else. I'm not sure. But it really dawned on me that I wasn't just doing it wrong, but I was actually putting myself in a position where it wasn't helpful. I was exerting so much extra energy into the way I was swimming that it didn't help me, even though I was quote unquote swimming. So you might think, I'm getting results. I am successful without self-kindness or self-compassion. Why should I be doing this? Why should I invest, 10 minutes, 5 minutes of my day, or hire you as a life coach, or do any of these things if I'm already successful? I would seriously question that success in the sense of, not from a place of judgment, but genuine curiosity, that are you doing this efficiently? Are you managing your stress in a way that you feel confident in? I could swim in calm conditions, but I could not swim in the rougher, more stressful situations. I avoided those things. Yourself, you might be just simply avoiding. What would you do with more energy? What would you do with your more time if you spent some time investing in those skills of self-compassion? What would success look like if you could go from a place of love versus maybe a place of willpower or force or that harsh self-criticism that we think might be motivation, which is actually just bullying in disguise? What if there was another way, and not only was that other way better for you, but more efficient and more safe, and just the long-term investment was so much more beneficial than doing it the current way you have? Some examples of ways to start practicing self-compassion. The ways I'm going to encourage you is by how to respond to your negative emotions, because this is how you can use all four different skills of self-compassion. So let's say you're overwhelmed. Your current thoughts might be, I don't know what I'm doing. This is so overwhelming. I can't do this. What is wrong with me? Why does everyone else figure it out? This sounds familiar. Or insert whatever you feel when you're overwhelmed. In fact, listen to the last podcast episode on building belief and do the exercises in that, specifically the thought download. I explain it in detail in the last episode. Do a thought download of when you're overwhelmed. What does it feel like to be overwhelmed? What thoughts do you have when you are overwhelmed? And those specific thoughts, your response to your overwhelm is contributing to more overwhelm. How you respond when you are overwhelmed is going to tell you a lot about your level of skill with self-compassion. How understanding are you when you're overwhelmed? How accepting are you? How kind are you? What that can look like is, oh, I'm noticing I'm overwhelmed right now. Sometimes this starts by noticing the physical sensations. My body gets hot. I feel overstimulated. I feel headache. I feel tension in my neck, right? Like whatever comes up for you, those are some just random examples, but you might need to take some time just to notice how overwhelm feels physically. Because often by the time we're reacting to the overwhelm, we haven't even felt our bodies. We're ignoring it all. We're used to ignoring and like pushing through. So notice your physical sensations and be very curious. Oh, I'm noticing I'm overwhelmed right now. I wonder what I need in this moment. How can I help myself right now? Sometimes you don't even need a reason to be overwhelmed. Today, cooking dinner, it was hot. I noticed I was starting to feel a bit overwhelmed and I needed to finish dinner. So I was like, okay, what do I need right now? And I was like, I just need to sit in silence for like 3 minutes. I would have loved to sit in silence for like 20 minutes, but sometimes in the reality of life, you don't get 20 minutes. And this is something that is so rooted in perfectionism, is that my clients will come to me and be like, well, I just want like an hour to decompress and I just don't have that. And that might be true, my friends. We might not have the hour we so desperately want, but that doesn't mean you don't have 3 minutes to give yourself a little bit of what you need. And those minutes might seem so inconsequential at first, but it's the habit of noticing your body and taking care of yourself that over time builds that ease, that comfort, that self-care. I told my husband, I said, I need you to fix the plates for dinner. I'm going to go sit in my office for 3 minutes. And I sat down. I didn't do anything. I think I just like sat and stared at the wall. I breathed. I let myself calm down a little bit. Nothing was wrong. Nothing happened. All I did was cook dinner. And after all the cooking and the thoughts for cooking and the coordination for the cooking and the kids running in and out of the kitchen, I just needed 3 minutes of alone time and silence before I went back out and kept being a mom and kept doing the things that I needed to do. Those are the questions you are going to have to ask yourself, and you might not know the answers right away. It's okay to just guess. There's no right answer sometimes. Sometimes it's about experimenting. Allow yourself to find small ways to give yourself what you need that are realistic and simple. You don't have to overcomplicate self-care, that just help you return to a baseline. Return to a spot that's easier for you to regulate. Because what I was doing by taking those 3 minutes by myself was just giving myself some pause and some silence to help regulate my body, so that when I went back out there, I wasn't already on edge. I wasn't already at a place where I was going to be more impatient or less kind. The next one is being tired. This one is, of course, so common for moms. We are tired all the time. And I realized as I get older, I'm probably just going to get more and more tired. I feel like it's finally dawned on me, like, oh yeah, all the adults in my life growing up were so tired because adulthood is exhausting. Specifically, when you are tired, maybe from not getting enough sleep or just having a really busy time in your life, maybe you're in and out of the hospital, the way you can employ self-compassion is how you respond to your tiredness. The way I used to respond to tiredness was often feeling really sorry for myself. And I thought this was self-compassion. I thought being sorry for myself, falling into that self-pity, was self-compassion. But it wasn't. It was self-pity, and it was being sorry for myself. And this didn't make me feel better. This made me feel helpless. This made me feel resentful. This made me feel even worse because I perpetuated my pain. I stopped looking for solutions. I was not self-compassionate, and I complained about how tired I was, not just to sometimes to other people, but mostly to myself. And that echoing of being tired in my mind caused me to feel so many different things. Sometimes it was resentment. Sometimes it was more exhaustion. But the exhaustion wasn't necessarily physical. It was emotional because I was emotionally unregulated as well. And yes, when we are physically tired, it is a bit harder to regulate yourself emotionally. This is why I'm such an advocate for regular sleep and prioritizing sleep over everything else, especially if you are in a season of life that is very demanding. Prioritizing sleep is more important than alone time. And that's a hill I'm going to die on, because sleep impacts you so much. But sometimes it's unavoidable. Sometimes we just can't sleep. Sometimes our kids get up in the middle of the night and are sick. Sometimes we have to go to the emergency room. Sometimes we have insomnia. Sometimes we just don't fall asleep. Sometimes we stay up late reading a book. Okay. Own that. Own your tiredness. Seriously, complaining about how tired you feel doesn't actually make you feel better. It just makes you feel more tired. And there's a difference between noticing that you're tired, expressing to your spouse or partner saying, yeah, I'm actually really tired. I didn't get enough sleep last night. I'm going to go to bed earlier tonight. Like saying that out loud helps, but also just like saying, hey, if I'm a little grumpier, I'm sorry. I'm very tired and I need to get some more sleep tonight. Giving yourself permission to rest more is a way to give yourself compassion. Sometimes, especially in the afternoon, I'll notice myself feel tired. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to sit down for 20 minutes because the answer to being tired is rest. And I'm not a huge napper. And I don't really love to nap. Sometimes I do, but rarely do I actually nap. And sometimes you're just going to have to, you can't nap, right? Sometimes that sleeping isn't an option, but resting can be. The answer to being tired is rest. And giving yourself opportunities to rest without shame or guilt is self-compassionate. Being able to pause and notice the sensations of being tired, notice how being tired feels in your body, gives yourself more attunement to when you are feeling grumpy and you're like, oh, why am I so grumpy? And you're like, oh, of course I'm feeling a little bit more grumpy. I didn't get to sleep last night. It's so understandable that I'm a little bit less patient today. I'm a little bit more emotional. This sets you up to get ahead of it, to recognize it, being able to express your needs, give your spouse or family some warning. It's totally normal to be like, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm tired today, kiddos. I'm not up for running around outside, I'm not up for going to the beach or going whatever. And it's okay to prioritize those needs for yourself too. Another way is when you're impatient. Oftentimes, if you notice you're impatient, you are judging your situation. There's a whole episode on impatience called The Patience Trick. And essentially, it is about being less judgmental. Because when you are impatient, you're often looking at your situation as something has gone wrong. This shouldn't be taking this long. My kids shouldn't be acting this way. I shouldn't have to repeat myself. I should be better. I should be faster. Any kind of this self-talk is, or thinking is rooted in like something has gone wrong. And the way you can reverse that and apply more self-compassion and be compassionate to others is by asking yourself, how can I have a little less judgment right now? What am I thinking has gone wrong? What am I thinking that my kids should not be doing, that they're still doing, and I can't change that? I can't change that my kid is crying, but I can take a breath and be less judgmental of their crying. That doesn't change that I, you know, help them through it. It might not even change that they stop crying, because sometimes kids are going to cry no matter what you say. But giving yourself room to respond to your impatience with understanding and curiosity of the situation stops yourself from being impatient. Where can you take a pause and breathe? When you make a mistake, let's say you are grumpy and impatient because you're tired and you're feeling overwhelmed. What if all three things are happening at the same time and you just snapped at your husband, yelled at your kids, burned dinner, right? All these things are going wrong. Then what? I can tell you what is common, what I've done, what is the default for many of us is to question our worth immediately. We do these things, and then we become defensive because we feel like we can't even make mistakes in the first place. So that when we do, we just feel like this is the worst thing that we could have done. It reinforces that we're unworthy because worthy people don't make mistakes, obviously. And this leads you to questioning a lot of things, your success, your contributions. You feel very afraid of talking about your mistakes or the choices or your behavior. You might even be defensive and not feel like you can apologize for your behavior or repair or make amends because you feel so afraid that this is just going to confirm your fear that you are unworthy and broken to begin with. But compassion includes understanding that perfectionism is not real. There's never going to be a reality where you never make a mistake and you're always patient and you're never tired and you're never grumpy. Because again, you are a human experiencing all of the emotions and you are allowed to experience all of the emotions of the human experience. You're allowed to be a little grumpy. You're allowed to be tired. You're allowed to experience these feelings. The problem becomes when we think that how we respond to those emotions is out of our control. How we respond to our own grumpiness, all of those things, the actions are the part that we don't like, right? Even the emotion of anger gets demonized because we think anger is the problem. And I don't believe anger or any emotion is the problem. It is how you respond to that emotion that becomes the problem. The actions become problematic. All of your feelings are valid. All of your actions may not be. And that is okay. Okay. It's still okay to make mistakes. No one needs to be perfect to be loved. And this is so crucial for mothers to understand. We have to allow ourselves to accept that we're going to make mistakes, because the fear of making mistakes stops you from changing your behavior. If you want to not be as grumpy, you feel like you maybe are a grumpy person, you have to be okay with not always being positive or happy or whatever the opposite of grumpy is for you. If you want to be able to take accountability and apologize for when you do something wrong or make a mistake, you have to recognize you're not apologizing for your self-worth. You're not apologizing for who you are. That's shame talking. You're apologizing because you know that it's the right thing to do to repair something, repair your relationships when you make a mistake, when you snap at someone, when you are not as patient. Modeling this kind of behavior for our children is super helpful. You don't have to question your worth or anything else when you do something that you may not be proud of. You can simply understand, give yourself understanding, and take accountability for it, make the repair, and that's that. It's way easier to apologize to people when you don't feel like your worthiness is on the line, because you're not outsourcing your worthiness from anywhere else besides yourself. Like, you are worthy because you exist, not for any other reason. One of the ways you can employ self-compassion is when you do not do something that you told yourself you were going to do. This is really easy way to go down the self-criticism route. Tell yourself you're the worst, that you don't do things when you say you're going to do, you're unreliable, you're irresponsible, blah, 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 blah. All of those things are going to stop you from doing what you want to do. And when you do end up doing it, it's going to be from that self-loathing or forceful place, which is unsustainable and not recommended. So instead, own it, get curious, do a thought download, ask for coaching in the podcast group, and help yourself be understanding. Can you understand why you didn't do what you did? Is it understandable that you're not exactly motivated to do the laundry or go to an exercise class or whatever it is, the last thing you said you were going to do and you didn't do it? And why do you want to do it in the first place? Do you like your reasons for wanting to do that thing? These are all helpful questions in order to help you offer yourself that understanding and acceptance. Okay, my friends, every long-term habit change, every stride in healing that I have ever made has included self-compassion. Learning how to be self-compassionate is how you can lovingly hold yourself accountable, lovingly make changes in your life. And you don't need to put any kind of conditions on loving yourself. You are allowed to love yourself without any conditions at all. And by doing so, you are going to only keep fueling all of the positive things that you want in your life. If you want to make changes in your life, if you have a goal, if you want to stop feeling overwhelmed, if you want more confidence, if you want better relationships, all of it is going to come down to these small skills, these habits, these daily minutes, those small shifts in your mindset, how you respond to your feelings. It's all going to come down to those things. And these are the things you can absolutely do in your life today. And a very efficient way of doing them is by working with me as a coach. If you have ever been curious about life coaching, don't hesitate to sign up for a coaching call. In 90 days or 12 weeks, however you want to frame my 3-month coaching program, we work together and build every skill you need in order to stop feeling overwhelmed, feel more in control of your emotions and how to manage your brain so that you are more confident and more self-assured and you know how to stop self-doubt. We will fill your emotional health toolbox with so many different tools that you will constantly be using them. I get messages from previous clients regularly telling me, hey, I'm still using these tools that you taught me a year ago or 2 years ago. I still think about this one coaching session that we had that really changed how I look at myself or how I look at parenting or how I look. I coached one of my previous clients on her ADHD and how she can respond to her ADHD and how she could be more compassionate about her ADHD as a parent, because she had a lot of shame around it. I would love to talk to you about what coaching will look like for you specifically. Consults are incredible because you get to really clarify what you want from coaching, and I can show you how I can help you get there. And we talk about what's going on in your life and how to make what might seem like really unattainable goals very simple, because it is not complicated. It's not always easy, but it's not complicated doing the things that will help you gain the skills that will last a lifetime. Schedule a consult, and I am looking forward to meeting you. I will tune in next Tuesday with another episode. Thank you so much for listening to
the episode is over, but there's so much more you can get from our Facebook group. Come to the Mindset for Medical Moms Facebook group community at the link in the show notes and discuss all the things about the podcast. Also, you can get coached for free. Come and ask me questions and connect with fellow medical moms. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much.